Some of the distinctions between Willie Mays and Mickey Mantle were obvious. The former is black, the latter was white. Willie didn't drink, and for decades, Mickey couldn't stop. But as Alan Barra points out, in Mickey and Willie, Mantle and Mays, the parallel lives of baseball's golden age, the similarities between the two transcendent ballplayers were striking. The author joins me from NPR's New York Bureau. Alan Barra, welcome back to Only a Game.
Nice to be here.
Let's start with what Mickey Mantle and Willie Mays shared. They both began their careers in center field for teams in the New York spotlight. They were both destined to make the Hall of Fame. And in their earliest days in the majors, both of them had serious doubts about whether they belonged there. How did each handle the doubt?
First of all, I've got to say something. A trivia expert's going to get you. When Mickey came to New York, they made him play right field, because Joe DiMaggio was in center field.
Ah, yes. Very briefly, they overlapped. Right.
Right. Mickey, the next year, took over in center. Oh, both had tremendous doubts. Mickey probably worse. His father just drove and drove him to be a ball player. It was the only way out that he could see of being a miner, you know, working in the mines, which was brutal, awful work. Willie, I think, had fewer doubts, probably. Didn't doubt his own ability. Willie's father was a steel worker in Birmingham, and right outside of Birmingham. The only doubt that Willie, I think, really had was whether or not the major leagues were going to integrate. One thing they both had in common, I think they were the last products of something that vanished about 1950, what I would call industrial league baseball. That's where companies would provide uniforms, bats, equipment, all kinds of stuff for the workers to play baseball. I doubt whether Mickey Mantle and Willie Mays would have become major league players had their fathers not been industrial league ball players.
Willie Mays played in the Negro Leagues during the late 40s, and he had at least seen some cities before he reached New York. That gave him an advantage over Mantle, right?
Mantle was a hick, and there's no nicer way of saying it. And it's true. Willie had traveled in the Negro Leagues. He'd been to New York. He'd seen many of the big cities. It's also true that he only saw basically one side of the big cities, but that's a lot more than Mickey Mantle saw. When Willie came to the big leagues, the Giants had people to help him out. They hired people to help him, teach him how to dress, teach him how to tip in restaurants. Mickey, he didn't have anyone looking out for him, and he signed over his endorsement rights to a shyster. I mean, none of that was necessary. The Yankees should have had somebody there to help him, and they didn't.
In the 1951 World Series, after the Yankees, with a very young Mickey Mantle, had beaten the Giants with a very young Willie Mays, Mantle went back home to Commerce, Oklahoma, for what you call in the book the last hours of pure relaxation that he would know for the rest of his life. That's a very dramatic statement. What did you mean?
He was certainly a hometown hero, and he was certainly known, but he wasn't yet a national celebrity. And you could hang out in the pool hall, you know, buy drinks for people. He was still one of the group. It wasn't as if everybody was hitting him up for favors or money, which was much the case later on. After that, the pressure became enormous, the pain from injuries, the mental anguish of his father's death, and something that plagued him for the rest of the decade. Mickey was counted 4F by the draft board just about the time the Korean War was getting underway. So not only does he have to feel the pain every day of these injuries, he's got to undergo this merciless booing as if it was Mickey's fault, as if it was his call, which of course it wasn't. Now Willie gets to go into the Army and does nothing but play baseball the entire time he's there.
Willie Mays didn't have many opportunities to play in the World Series, and when he was on the big stage, he was not especially successful. Mantle, on the other hand, was brilliant in the World Series, but he was never particularly impressive in All-Star games, where Mays was completely magnificent. It's kind of a strange symmetry, isn't it?
It is, but let's remember that the World Series games count, and the All-Star games really don't. Willie, I think, in the World Series he played in twice against Mickey, did nothing significant except make that incredible catch in the 1954 World Series. Willie did have one other significant moment in the World Series. He changed baseball history. in 1951 in the second game of the series of their rookie seasons, Willie hits a fairly deep fly ball. Mickey Mantle is going after because he was instructed to take anything he could to take the strain off Joe DiMaggio. Mickey steps on a drain pipe, a cover that was left off, and wrenches his knee terribly, and he was never the same. I believe that play kept Mickey Mantle from being the greatest player in baseball history.
You know, I'm a little uncomfortable with the drift of this conversation, Alan, because I grew up in New Jersey, a Giants fan in the 50s, New York and then San Francisco Giants, and so I know Willie Mays was the greatest player ever, but I guess
well,
for...
I did too.
I grew
up in a Willie Mays household. I loved both of them.
So you're not making the case that Mantle was better as we speak because it feels as if we're drifting that way.
It depends on your definition of better. Over a length of time, over a career. If that's your criteria, then Willie Mays was the best. He was better longer. But if you want to talk about peak seasons, like three or four peak seasons, I don't think there's any question looking back on it now that Mickey was 1956, 1957, and probably 61 and maybe 62. Not merely better than Willie, but better than anybody up to that time.
It's evident throughout Mickey and Willie that you hold both players in high esteem and certainly did while you were growing up. How do you feel about the two men now?
There was a week in 1969 when I was a gopher at the Birmingham News, and I found out that Mickey had been in town and had gone on a drinking tear, with one of my idols, Paul Bear Bryant, the Alabama football coach. Willie, that same week, I heard at his fried chicken and hamburger place in Birmingham, he got into a verbal battle with an editor at one of the black newspapers in town about his lack of involvement with the civil rights movement. And I mean total lack of involvement. You reach a point in your life where you measure yourself against the person that you thought you wanted to be when you were younger, and then maybe have to cut your idols some slack, because it's really tough to carry the burden of someone's dreams. You have to understand that they're simply not going to be able to live up to your ideal. I came to terms with it. I think overall, I look back on it, I look at the pressure, what was expected of Mickey Mantle and Willie Mays, and I'd have to say they did okay.
Alan Vera is the author of Mickey and Willie, Mantle and Mays, The Parallel Lives of Baseball's Golden Age. The book is published by Crown, and the author joined me from NPR's New York Bureau. Alan, thank you very much for speaking with me.
Bill, it's been a pleasure.
Say hey, say Willie, that Giants kid is great.
Baseball fans in the 50s and 60s debated Mickey and Willie, but there have been a lot of great center fielders. What about Ken Griffey Jr., Mike Trout, and the third guy in that old song, Duke Snyder? Tell us about your favorite center fielder of all time at facebook.com/onlyagameradio.
Oh, I love Mickey.
Mickey who?